I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
There it is. Sam LaCure. It's the Dead Red Cincinnati podcast. Welcome back.
That song gets me fired up.
It should. That's the idea.
That's a buddy of mine, a guitar player. So my guitar teacher kind of put me onto this guy. His name's Kevin Canifax. He wrote that song himself. And you may be hearing it in the ballpark here pretty soon. But yeah, that's ours to begin with. I mean, it's not ours, but all right, I'll shut up. You go.
We're going to make it famous though.
Okay.
All right, listen. You always dress for the occasion, and yep. I can't help but notice that you have on a t-shirt today that I'm familiar with this one, right? I love it. We're talking about the Cobra, right?
That's right.
Dave Parker.
The iconic picture of him, probably smoking in the dugout.
Well, the famous picture of Parker in that shirt, he's got kind of on the gardening straw hat and a fired up a heater.
Yep.
And he's got that shirt. So there's probably a story behind you having that show.
I look forward to sharing it at some point real soon.
All right. We're going to try to get to that later in the show, but listen, let's do this first because we're going to get right to one of our top-notch Twitter or X questions from the vast multitude of loyal listeners and viewers that we already have for Dead Red Cincinnati. And the question is this, we'll start with this. Take me back to Sam LaCure in the bullpen in his prime, when you're feeling the most like nails and Sam LaCure you can, you go to the bullpen to get ready for the game. What is your setup? What is your routine? And what's some of the craziness you see around you from some of those guys out there beyond the outfield fence with you?
Okay. So I was definitely getting there early, you know, because I was a guy who, if somebody got hurt in the first inning, a la 2012 playoffs, I might be coming in the first. And that was before I even got to the Copenhagen part of my routine. I get there and it was like one of those little Nutri-Grain bars, wash it down with a sugar-free Red Bull. And then once I get done with that, then it's the lip stuff time,
Which
I don't want to talk too much about.
That's right. Kept you going.
I don't do that anymore.
Had
my own, everybody, you know, assigned seating, man. I mean, routine in baseball does not end with which sock you put on first. It's where you sit, what time you get there. So we're getting there. Logan Andrusik sitting there next to me. He was the most OCD dude of all time. And I'm OCD.
He was also 6'8", right?
He was also like 6'8", but he would go through his little routine. So part of my routine was watching him have to go through 100 things a game. I felt bad for him. And it always ended up, I knew when it was over, because he would crush his Red Bull can. And okay. You know, I think that might have been around the fourth. And so once he got done with that, I knew it was about time for me to get going on, you know, my warm-up stuff, which is around, it was either 75 pitches for the starter or after the fifth inning. Because then I was like, all right, then I need to make sure I'm ready at any time here. So, kind of watching as guys arrive, you know, Sean Marshall and Jonathan Broxton would get there around like the third. And then whoever was kind of coming, you know, me and JJ and Logan were always there early. JJ Hoover, Manny Parra would, you know, come out maybe a little bit late. But, you know, there was a certain group who liked to get there for the anthem. And then it just became, you know, watching everybody trickle in. Because, I mean, my routine as far as, you know, some of the gimmicky stuff wasn't too much, but it was more.
No resistance bands.
Nope. It was just kind of the run around. I ran around in circles a couple times, you know, did a couple of these.
You do that now.
Huh?
You do that now.
Yeah, I know.
This is also kind of your pregame routine for the pregame show, right?
That's right. All right. But it was more watching the other guys. Logan was, I mean, it was a trip, man. It's like he had something. I don't know how he remembered it. You know, it's like it felt like it was something every 5 minutes. I remember that. Logan's still pitching over in Korea or
really?
Something.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah. Wow. He's a big star. He's a big star over there.
Andrusic had a mental checklist. I like that. But and there we go. I love the visual. I love the visual. You painted the picture. And for us, that's kind of like our ceremonial first pitch for the show. We're going to try to do something like this every time. It might be like a first pitch. It might be wild. It might be funny. We're going to try to do something ceremonial off the top. And so we start with that story and we say, welcome to the Dead Red Cincinnati podcast. Brian Giesenslaw, former Reds pitcher, Sam LaCure. You'll see us on Reds Live pre and post game on Bally Sports. That's our day gig. Love that. And let's dive into the leadoff spot now, which is what we call it, which is what our Reds discussion generally will be. And we know what the month of May has been for David Bell and the Reds. And Sam, there was a visual as the Reds returned to Great American Ballpark and beat the San Diego Padres. But before you ever got to the end of that game, in the first inning, David Bell, and we've seen David before, he gets, you know, when he gets ejected, it's usually for good reason. This time it was in the dugout. It was not directed at an umpire. It was not directed at the frustration of his team. But after Jake Fraley was hit on the hand again, David Bell took it out on a chair and the bat rack in the dugout.
Yeah.
And as you and I talked about this, wasn't there a piece of all of us, a piece of every Reds fan that was swinging that chair right along with David in frustration?
I mean, unfortunately, I hope so. Unfortunate that the team's in the situation that they are right now. And it's hard not to be frustrated. And I think you and I talked a little bit about it last night. Some of that's because the expectations for this year were higher. So if it was, you know, just going to be another ho-hum, we hope to get to 500, I don't think anybody would really care much about it. But it's frustrating because the expectations were higher and we haven't really gotten to see that kind of play itself out because, and I don't like to talk about guys who aren't on the field, but they are a part of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. So it's frustrating because you haven't had your Friedels and McClains and Martes and everybody all firing at one time. So I think that's where some frustration and some of the reason that those guys aren't here is because of situations like last night. I mean, exactly like that, hitting the hand, hitting the wrist, Tyler Stevenson, Jake Fraley, Friedel, Strand. There was somebody else that I was thinking. I mean, five or six guys jumped right into my mind last night as far as getting hit in the hand. And Jake was just another one of them and had to come out of the game. And the outfield is a position where they're already stretched pretty thin. Yeah. Who's even still out there? Spencer hadn't played in a couple of days. Hopefully, you'll see him again soon. But it's certainly been frustrating. I appreciate the fact that David does that. And it seems at no point during his tenure have I ever heard a player say anything other than David Bell has our back.
Right. And that's exactly what Andrew Abbott said after the game. And he said he's always had our back. And he also said that should fire us up. And
yeah.
You don't want to make too much of this. We can't make too much of the emotional component and how each guy reacts to certain things. But Andrew Abbott said that. But in between, as David was asked about it post-game and he's describing what happened, he was talking about the injuries. He was not talking about the play of his team, but he did use the phrase, enough is enough. And I think in the broader context of what's happening with the Reds right now, you could apply that to the injuries, but all of us want to apply that to the greater picture of when are they going to turn it around?
Yeah.
And maybe we look back at some point at some of these things that have happened in a few games and the reaction from David Bell. And maybe you look back and you hope that you look back if you're the Reds and say, maybe we turned a little bit of a corner there, whether it was meant to be that or not. You hope you want to grasp onto that right now and look back and say, maybe that's where they turned a corner.
And that's, I guess, the beauty of hindsight, you know, I mean, because we always, you know, regardless of what situation the Reds are in, whether it's, you know, they're on a losing streak, what's going to keep the momentum going? If they're on a losing streak, what's the spark going to be? We hoped it was when TJ came back, but you're always looking for that spark and it may not present itself to you in that moment. Now we're talking about this today. So this is something that obviously struck a chord with us, and we imagine struck a chord with the people around Cincinnati or the you know, Reds country in general. But I think it could. I always kind of reverted to, if I need any help getting fired up to play in the big leagues, like, because if I'm a player, I'm probably kicking some stuff too. You know, enough's enough. Like, and as one person in a team game, you can only do so much. That's why David probably feels pretty helpless. He even said it yesterday, I think, or whenever it was, you know, there's really not anything I can do about it. But, and that's the helpless feeling, you know, you just, which is why it's a team concept, man. If everybody goes out there and does their part, you figure it's going to turn. So hopefully that's now.
Yeah, I hope so. All right, we've talked and we'll continue to talk some big picture stuff about starting pitching and the stars of starting pitching around the game. We'll get to that. But what about the stars of the game and marketing the game based on the stars, their performances, their personalities, which is a word that I think has been brought back into baseball that for a while you kind of want to, you know, do this to it and brush it off to the side. Ellie De La Cruz has personality. He has star power, even at a young stage of his career. Fernando Tatis Jr. has star power. Got a little bit of a backstory too. But you can tell that, one, they have a relationship. They have a positive peer-to-peer, star-to-star relationship. And in game one of the Reds and Padres series at Great American Ballpark, De La Cruz, which he does all season long, is stretching what would be a single for everyone else to right field into a double. Close play at second base. Tatis comes up with the ball, fires it in, close play. And when he's ruled safe, De La Cruz gives him the Dikembe Mutombo finger wag out to right field. And there was a reaction from Tatis and it was positive. It was, all right, you got me that time. I'll get you next time, but you got me that time.
Yeah.
I think that's fantastic. I love it, but you have the whole crowd of people, as we've seen bat flips and finger wags and barking at a dugout. There's a lot of people that don't.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I have grown accustomed to it, I guess. You know, my thought during my playing days, you know, eons ago, it's like 10 years ago, that long ago, was I didn't ever want to show any emotion one way or the other. I always wanted to be a guy that you didn't know whether I was had just struck out the side or given up five runs. I didn't want anybody to know the difference, because to me that created an advantage for the opposition. They could see that I was frustrated, or they could see that I was cocky, and I didn't want them to know either one. Right. And then there's also the part of it. Now I'm also the part of it as I never wanted to show anybody up, you know, and the things that they're doing now certainly would have gone into that category several years ago that, oh, you're showing me up. You're going to get thrown at now. You can't do that anymore. And so that kind of thing is out the door, because there's injury involved with it, because everybody throws 100,
right?
You know, and all those different types of things. So as far as the personality and the branding of some of these players, like, am I on board with it now? Not all the way. Like, some of it still to me is a little bit over the top, but I do enjoy the enthusiasm. It's a younger game. The players are younger. I can certainly see both sides of it, and I'm slowly kind of coming out of my shell as far as and being right. being able to enjoy that, as long as the reciprocation for Fernando Tatis is a playful one and it doesn't turn into some big brawl where a bunch of people are getting hurt.
But even if it's not, even if you can't throw at somebody anymore in response to something, even if you can't have the brawl, which, you know, baseball brawls are never brawls, rarely brawls.
Yeah.
I'm okay if you get pissed off at somebody on the other side. I'm okay if you don't like that guy. Sure. In the case of Tatis and De La Cruz, they like each other. They're friends, and so that was a different thing. I didn't mean to ring the bell. That was inadvertent.
It's all right. But
I'm okay. There's also a faction of old-school ball players that don't like guys hugging it out during BP, you know?
I didn't either.
Yeah, but there's that. And so I think it might take us to a place that's actually okay, because the game of baseball is so humbling in and of itself that I think players will know where the line is without those lines being explicitly drawn out. If I'm gonna jump up and down or spike the bat or do something on the mound, I have to know that the next couple of days, pretty good chance I'm gonna be on the other end of it.
Yeah.
And I think that will help police or regulate the amount of this stuff that gets into the game.
Jubilation.
But again, I'm okay if you're on the other team and I don't like you. Maybe one day when we meet after we're done, or maybe we're on the same team one day, we remedy that.
Yeah.
But those guys that everybody says, you want him on your team, but you hate him when you play against him.
Some of my favorite teammates.
Right. We can have more of that.
Yeah.
We can have more of that in the game. I'd like you to hate the other team.
And I think that's where maybe the issue is, like, I want the incentive for you to go out and beat the other team to be so high that, you know, guys I played in college with, thankfully Drew Stubbs was on my team, but like played against Justin Turner and he was in the Reds organization. Then he went over to somewhere else and like, nah, like I wasn't going to talk. I'd talk to him after the series or I'd say, but never a hug during the thing, because I did not want my focus. I knew I loved Justin, but I did not want my focus to be taken away from the job at hand, because there was because there was 27 other guys or however many it was relying on me to go out there and be non-compassionate or whatever it is, you know, type of thing.
That's acceptable.
But I mean, I do think it's fun. Like it makes it funner to watch when guys can, you know, be out there and laughing, but the goal is to win ball games.
Goals to win the ball game. All right. Wraps up the leadoff spot. You got your bell?
I brought a bell too.
Well, you can ring it for if you need it for something, you know, if you want to interject or.
Mine's a happy bell.
Well, they're all happy.
It's not a David bell right now.
So there's that. All right, let's go on to the stretch now. And this was something that we started last time, having a conversation about a piece in The Athletic or a couple of pieces in The Athletic from Ken Rosenthal and Jason Stark about, does baseball need to modify rules to encourage the starting pitcher and the matchup and the star power of the starting pitcher to return that to the game? And we kind of got things started last week. We talked about requiring starters to go six. We talked about the double hook. If your starter comes out before six, you lose the DH. That was one thing. So they have a list of proposals, rules changes that could propel the starting pitcher back to the star power and the spotlight maybe that it's had in the past. And some of them, I think, are good, and some of them are a little absurd. But we're going to run through the list. And the next one on the list of proposed rules changes would be that a team can't have more than six relievers. And I'm looking at a reliever right now in the eyes.
Without
and
a
I'm
job.
I'm talking about cutting jobs. Yeah. So this is a tough sell, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, it's not. I mean, yeah, that'd be a pretty tough sell, especially because the game's become so reliant upon it.
Yeah.
It's such a huge part of, you know, how teams build a roster is based on, you know, their bullpen and being able to shut down wins towards the end of a game. And you see the usage and how it can change in the playoffs and such. That's, to me, it's not a reality. You have to do one. You kind of got to put the cart before the horse in this situation. Like, you have to have the starters going that deep for a couple of years to make it a league-wide thing before you could even consider cutting the other jobs, because if they just can't do it.
Yeah, it would be a gradual reduction.
It would have to be a gradual thing,
over the years. But still, I think that's probably one of the tougher ones.
that's pretty tough because specialization. Yeah. The jobs part of it.
Are.
I mean, it's always been, well, it's not always been five starters. It used to be four, I guess, but you know, now the five starter, now it's even gone to six starters. So, well, okay. If you consider that you're going to have seven starters and six bullpen guys, then it's a different story, right? Yeah. Yeah. Nobody said anything about the number of starters. They just said six relievers.
Yeah.
So it's possible. You got seven starters and six, you know, do the flip flop. I don't know. Right. I don't love it.
Yeah, I don't either.
They got 22 guys in the bullpen right now, and I still can't get a job.
There's that. The other thing.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And the overriding issue for saving the starting pitcher is health.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been a story from the start of this season. It's been amplified, I think, and that's a longer discussion. I'm not ready to have that discussion right now. But if you want to protect the health of your players, and they made the comparison to, you know, football implementing rules to protect the quarterback, should we implement rules to protect the starting pitcher? And if we, and a lot of this is still being studied and the medical folks are doing the research, but if we can logically assume that velocity and spin in greater intensity is impacting the health of pitching arms, which I think we can, then should there be certain things in place to reduce that? Should there be a ban on the sweeper, which is, doctors say, is tied specifically to a greater risk of arm injury based on what you have to do to your arm to make the baseball spin and move on that pitch? Should you put a limit on velocity, which I think is ridiculous? You can't do it. So my take on all of this is, we know those things. And if you're not going to ban certain pitches, players and organizations have to accept the inherent risk of injury if they have a bunch of guys who consistently throw 100, or they have a bunch of guys who spin the ball in certain ways that to a detriment to their arm. You accept that risk. It's going to happen. If you want to keep those guys in the game, accept it and move on. But that, to me, is not a way to try to help the starting pitcher.
I don't think, and honestly, dude, I don't think that organizations care about the answer to this question.
There you go.
Because here's a couple of reasons why. Because Walker Buehler, we just saw him last week, yeah, threw an awesome game, had a second Tommy John surgery. he was kind of doing an interview with somebody saying, I'm very aware that by me going out there and putting max effort behind every pitch that I'm putting myself at risk. So he's aware of it. Yeah. Number one, the players are aware that this is a possibility. So are the organizations. And the great thing about for them is that if Walker Buehler's making $20 million this year, they've got an insurance that's going to cover them to pay him $20 million. Mm-hmm. Not out of their pocket necessarily, right? And the more players that are getting hurt that they're not paying, really, they bring up a cheaper player. So the turnover is greater. So you're not getting to guys, you know, kind of in that middle lane. And I'll just kind of use, you know, me as myself as an example, getting to the point where I was starting to make, I mean, not a crazy amount of money by any means, but not so much over, you know, not $10 million, but they could find somebody to do it for league minimum that could be pretty close to what I was doing. You know, maybe they didn't have a track record. You know, I'd done it for 4 or 5 years, and you've got the rookie that's coming up who likely had better stuff than I did, who, you know, would be able to do it for, you know, a quarter as much. So you're talking about margins for these organizations to keep some money in the bank. And that's one of them, you know, the turnover of guys that are getting injured who don't make it back. They find somebody cheaper to do it. So I guess my broad stroke on that would be that I don't think that organizations really care. Mm-hmm. Now, when you find your Garrett Coles and your, you know, your top end guys, you know, for the Reds, obviously starting pitching is super important right now. And they want to protect these guys at all costs. Sometimes I feel like it's baby gloves, but they've been treated with baby gloves for a long time. Throw hard for a little bit, then we'll get you out of there before it becomes too much. So they've known all this, but it's an interesting concept. I love the starting pitching matchups.
Me too.
I we'll keep talking about it because hopefully something comes to mind, but there's nothing just on tip of tongue that is like, this is going to work and this is going to get us back to that anytime soon.
This is, there's some really good ones, I think, still on the list that we'll talk about later, but this conversation to be continued. There you go. You nailed it. All right, moving on. Time to finish things up with Five and Dive. And we've allotted a little bit more time for Five and Dive. Last time I called you out for the rapid fire nature of what we intended it to be. Knowing you, I should know that that's a difficult ask.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is to get anything rapid fire. But that's one of the things I love about you, man. One of the things I love about you. We're giving you more time this time because I like the questions.
Okay.
And we went to X and asked people for questions, and we're going to do that routinely on the show. And so it'll be for you, it'll be for me, but this time these are questions directed at Sam LaCure from the folks on the X in the Twitterverse. All right. So we're going to start with this. I think this one's a good one. Your favorite ballpark to pitch in. I think we've talked about this before, but give me that. And then think about if there's a ballpark past or present that you didn't have the opportunity to pitch and play in that you would have liked to, or that you think now you would like to be in that position.
Okay. This is not just me being Homer. I enjoyed pitching in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Home ballpark. I actually, you know, for being a pitcher's ball or a hitter's ballpark, I actually ran pretty good numbers there. I think better than on the road, but I always end up thinking of Wrigley and Fenway, you know, just loving to pitch there because of the history of it, which leads me to the one that I didn't get to pitch in, which would have been old Yankee Stadium. Mm-hmm. I just missed it because having a chance to pitch in the new one, it felt like a museum, like all clean and everything.
Right.
And just, it didn't have near the same feeling as when I walked into Fenway.
Yeah.
Right. And the history of it and the people who would have walked through the hallways. So it would have been old Yankee Stadium.
I like it. All right. Moving on to number two.
That was pretty good. That was like,
That was the clock was, it was favorable there.
Okay,
so
good.
Number two is thinking back to when you played, if the team was on a similar difficult stretch as the Reds are in right now, give me a good story of somebody that broke the ice in the clubhouse, whatever it was, just to try to change the vibe and change the mood.
So as you can imagine, Todd Frazier was a good one of these. I feel like I, you know, had my hand in a couple, just, you know, coming in acting like an idiot. The one that always has stuck out to me, and I'll try to keep this short, was in 2012, and it was Ryan Ludwig, who was one of my favorite teammates of all time. We were playing in Cleveland, and this is kind of the advent of the Ohio Cup.
The Cup.
the cup. So the whole, like that season was kind of, you know, you talk about looking back on something. I don't know what our record was at the time. I mean, we could have been 10 games over or 10 game under for all I know. But I remember Luddy coming in all fired up about wanting this Ohio Cup because nobody cared. Nobody cared about, we wanted to win the series, but the cup, I mean, nobody cared. But he came in, and I mean, he really wanted that cup bad. And so that became a thing for the rest of the year. We went to Philadelphia. We wanted the cream cheese cup. We went to San Francisco. We wanted the Golden Gate cup. And so we named it everywhere. We had the cup. And you remember, you know, the picture on the paper of me doing it on the clenching your thirst. So
and somebody picked it up at an antique shop or something.
Mesoraco. Like. And we made him fill it up with beer for, you know, to go to the bus, to go to the airport. So that was that. So Luddy, Frazier, those were two guys I think I tried to be, but, you know, I don't want to be too self-loving. More self-deprecating is my style.
That's okay. Number three, there was a question on the Twitterverse about tattoos and ink. You've got some outstanding ink, and there's some amazing art of your family that I think there are great stories there. So we'll do that sometime. But one tattoo you have has always been, as soon as you showed it to me and explained it to me, I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
If I had something that meant that much to me, I would do the same thing. And that is what?
That's this here.
What is that number on the back of your left arm?
So I don't know exactly how to explain it, but every time somebody got, so starting with the guy who I guess delivered the first pitch in Major League history, he was number one. Mm-hmm. And every person who interacted, you know, came up to bat or whatever was 2, 3, 4 down the road. You know, Babe Ruth was number, we'll say 714 because that's how many home runs he hit. You know, something like that. Bronson Arroyo was number 15,212.
But it's the number that signifies your official arrival to Major League Baseball, and you've made an appearance, and Baseball Reference tracks all this.
Chronologically and throughout history, and that was the number. And so I wanted something to commemorate, you know, pitching in the big leagues, but didn't want to have, like, my debut date and all this stuff. And I was kind of looking around, and I saw that. I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, my own little serial number. If people ask me what it is, I can say it was my prison number, and then, like, and then go to the story about what it actually is. So, dude, this is the best. And I shouldn't throw myself on the bus. Tangent, quick. So I was going on looking at something on Baseball Reference the other day. Bronson and I were talking about service time, you know, and how it affects your pension, basically. And so I went on there and was looking for my service time. I guess they made some modifications, and I don't think this number's right anymore.
No. No way.
I swear, I think it's like, well, I don't even know what it is now, but I think it's 19753 or whatever it is. So I was like, damn it. So I may have to do some alterations on that, but I thought that was actually pretty funny.
So that's the best part of the story that I didn't know.
The number of player I allegedly was in history.
Sam shows up at the tattoo shop and rolls out some random number and goes, I think that's what number I was in Major League Baseball. Go ahead.
Pretty much.
All right. I like that one. We'll talk more tattoos later. The number behind you while we're on the number category, 63.
Yep.
You're 63 to me. You always will be 63 to me.
Yep.
How did you arrive at that number? Is there a good story?
So there's a story.
I forgot to ring the bell. This is number four.
Okay. I was always number 21. So Roger Clemens was my favorite player when I was in grade school and high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always number 21. I got to college at Texas where he went to school. Yep. His number was retired, so couldn't wear it. Got to the minor leagues and, you know, asked for number 21 every year. Got it most years.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to the big leagues, it was Chris Dickerson, formerly of Believe in Reds, that was on this show, who was wearing number 21. I'm like, oh, I'm a rookie. Like, I'm not going to ask for it. I had number 63 in spring training for the last couple of years. And, you know, was always like, okay, I'm kind of on the cusp of being in the big leagues. I would like number 21. If I don't get it, what would I do? Right. Well, there's 21. There's 42, Jackie Robinson, which was retired Major League Baseball. And there's 63, which is a multiple of 21.
Ooh, I like that. I never knew that. Never knew it.
There you go.
Story behind 63.
There it is.
I like that. I like that a lot. Final question today. Yeah, let's ring it. Number five for Five and Dive is the shirt. Give me the Dave Parker story behind the shirt that we touched on off the top.
All right. So you and I maybe had been on one with him before, the Reds Caravan, and, you know, the Cobra was on it or would meet us in a stop. And, you know, it's Parkinson, doesn't he?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's got some kind of a disease that's, he hasn't been doing great of late, but this was, you know, kind of early in that phase. Yeah. And he was great. Always real good to me. And, you know, met him a couple of times along the way and always a sweetheart of a man for a giant of a man. And then I saw him this year at Bronson's Hall of Fame induction.
Mm-hmm.
And again, wasn't looking awesome, but he came into the hotel and I had just bought this shirt recently. This is Homage, which I'm pretty sure is a Columbus company. And walked up to him and he didn't recognize me, but he recognized my voice, which I thought was funny. And so we talked a little bit. Hey, how you doing, Sam? I said, blah, blah. He's like, you boys going to get after it tonight? And I kind of leaned up in his ear. I said, Dave, if you hear any noise, that's just me and the boys bopping. He goes, I've heard that before. So I wanted to have that on today. One, because Dave Parker's just an amazing man and we all wish him well. And, you know, I'm going to try and wear something nice for the show. So
I love it. I love the shirt. And Dave, like you said, has always been so good to all of us and the stories that he's told. But even now, as he fights this battle, this health battle,
when he has his moments. He's still there.
Got that sparkle in his eye.
No doubt about it.
Those eyes, the color of his eyes and the way they look at you, all the best to the Cobra.
Like a true Cobra.
Like a true Cobra. We love it. That's number five. And that's it. I think that's it for this show. You want to know time?
We tried. I don't think we did great, but.
Well, 32.
Not bad.
Not too bad. It's fun. I think this is the first television version of the show, which we'll try to keep that going and try to keep you out there engaged with the podcast and the Reds and more great stories. Red Cincinnati. Sam, like see you next time. I don't know. Cincinnati, we're awesome. Go Reds, go. Go Reds, go.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go.
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erlita is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erlita.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active. Things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noon Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noon Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noon hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything. Because anything can happen after noon.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on.
Crunch Island. It's John Lefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Give your home a beautiful makeover with flooring options from Menards. Update your room with flooring from Tarkett. From easy-to-install sheet vinyl, waterproof vinyl plank, to durable laminate flooring, Tarkett has the perfect style for you. Grovewood laminate flooring is stain, scratch, and dent resistant and designed with busy families in mind. Save big money on our wide variety of flooring options in-store or on Menards.com for more great deals now at Menards.
Save big.